While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and to all our faithful listeners joining us from every or from any corner of the world. I thank you for tuning into Eagle FM, the station where conversations count. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On the Radio News Analysis, your weekday deep dive into the issues shaping Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. Now, it's Monday, the 10th of November, 2025, and we are beginning off a new week, yet with a week of headlines, debates, and developments. We also take a moment to reflect, unpack, and make sense of the stories that continue to define our national journey, of course, from the halls of parliament to the heartbeat of our communities. This is where Namibia's most pressing conversations find depth, context, and clarity. Now, right here on the radar, we don't just tell you what's happening. We explore why it's happening, how it affects you, and what it means for the future of our nation. So every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430, we move beyond the headlines through expert interviews, archived audio, sharp commentary, and of course, your voices. Because in a world where information moves fast, understanding must move deeper. Now today, as we begin a new week, we'll look at key developments, spotlight the voices shaping our national discourse, and bring you thoughtful analysis on the issues that matter most, all with the balance, the credibility, and the insights you've come to expect from On the Radar. Now remember, you can catch On the Radar live across all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us on the Eagle FM app, or join in on the conversation via our WhatsApp channel for exclusive insights, highlights, and behind the scenes updates. So wherever you're tuning in from, your home, your office, or the road, do stay with us. Stay thoughtful, stay curious, because right here on the Reading News Analysis, Namibia doesn't just listen, Namibia comes to think. Now let's get right into the top stories. The National Housing Enterprise, NHE, has officially handed over the Kurankuru Extension 3 site to Sake Shikongo Construction for the development of 172 new houses. Now, that is a $13.2 million Namibian project expected to create about 300 jobs for local residents in the Kavango West region. Now, speaking at the handover ceremony on Friday, NHE Acting Executive for Infrastructure Development, Indileni Setsem Ipinge, said the project represents another step into the enterprise's ongoing efforts to deliver affordable housing and improve living conditions for Namibians. This event is not just a site handover, it's a continuation of a vision that began here. We are proud to witness progress towards providing decent and affordable housing to Namibians, Ipinge said. He added that the 8-month project will include the installation of municipal services such as water, electricity, and sewer systems, paving the way for long-term housing growth in Kurankuru. Now, the construction of the first 50 houses will commence midway through the servicing phase in April 2026 to ensure smooth progress and prevent vandalism. Ipinge further revealed that NHE is finalizing the acquisition of 83 additional serviced earth in Extension 6, which will bring the total to 255 housing units for new low-income families in Kurankuru. Now, all units will feature NHE's new modern designs launched in October 2025, reflecting the enterprise commitment to quality, sustainability, and dignity in housing. Meanwhile, Liveve Angelios, chairperson of the Kurankuru Management Committee, welcomed the NHE team and applauded the project's commencement, describing it as a long-awaited development that will uplift the local community. We are happy to see this project finally coming to reality. I urge our residents, especially the youth, to take advantage of this opportunity and become homeowners. Let's stop renting and start owning, said Angelius. Now, local residents have also expressed optimism about the project, saying it will not only provide housing, but also much needed employment opportunities. This is a great step for Kurunkuru. Many of us have been renting for years, and now we have hope that we can own a house right here in our hometown, said Martha Kangungu, a local resident. Another resident, John Amutenya, said he welcomed the decision to prioritize local labor. It is good to see development coming our way. I'm also happy that they're hiring local people because jobs are hard to find here. This project will help many families, he said. Now, the Kurunkuru Housing Development Project forms part of NHE's broader national initiative to reduce Namibia's housing backlog, currently estimated at over 300,000 units, while simultaneously stimulating local economies through infrastructure, investment, and job creation. Let's now take a listen to NHE's Executive for Infrastructure Development, that is Indileni Setsam Ipinge.
Kuru into a model town for housing development in the Kavango West region. Following the completion of the design phase by Square Consulting Engineers, JV DNP Engineers, and the approval by the Kurunkuru Town Council, the procurement process to appoint the contractor was then concluded on the 16th of July, 2025. Of course, development is slow, but with the Procurement Act, we need to make sure that all the boxes are ticked. And hopefully, the custodians of the Act will review so that the period can be shortened. It is important to note that the land initially made available by the Kurunkuru Town Council comprised of 100 even, in line with NHE's strategic goal to maximize land use and house more families. We took the decision to subdivide and densify the area. As a result, we created 72 additional even, bringing the total to 172. This project therefore includes the realignment and construction of municipal services to accommodate the increased number of even. This work is essential to ensure that the electrical, water and sewer systems are properly adjusted or upgraded to meet the new layout and the new or the higher demand for services in Extension 3. In simple terms, where there were 100 ERF connections, we now have 172. Similarly, where there was one manhole, we will now install an additional manhole to cater for the increased number of households. This is a practical example of how infrastructure must evolve to support growing communities. Today, we are here to officially hand over the site to the appointed contractor, S. Shikongo Construction. Maybe you will call Shikongo, S. Shikongo.
Yeah.
So maybe you'll become Shikongo Construction.
Yeah.
So that is fine. Who will carry out the construction of municipal services for the 172 even. This includes water, sewer, and electrical infrastructure, the backbone of any sustainable housing development. We can't build the houses without services. We are pleased to announce that the contractor is now ready to begin with the actual dust or work, with the total servicing cost amounting to 14.2 million. The duration of the servicing project is set at 8 months, starting from today. So the contractor should have brought all the equipment necessary. Maybe some of them are the ones that are busy with the noise at the background. However, we encourage the contractor to adopt a business unusual approach, one that prioritizes efficiency, innovation, and speed, so that we may see completion even earlier, maybe April or May. To ensure optimal use of the resources and prevent idle infrastructure, we have also scheduled the construction of houses, or the first phase of 50 houses, to begin midway through the servicing phase around April 2026. So the top structure will come in as the contractor for servicing progresses. The houses, the 50 houses will follow. So this proactive approach will help us to avoid issues such as vandalism, especially with the electrical cables, and also to reduce security risk. In addition, ladies and gentlemen, to extension 3 where we are now, I'm pleased to inform you that NHE is also at an advanced stage of acquiring 83 fully serviced single residential even in Kurenkuru extension 6. It's on the other side of the main road. Together, these two projects will enable us to deliver a total of 255 housing units for low-income families in Kurenkuru of Kavango West over the next 20 months. So we plan it over the two financial years. These developments are not only about housing, they are about economic empowerment, as Honorable Councillor has said. And we expect the combined activities to create more than 300 jobs, offering opportunities for local contractors, artisans, and building material suppliers. I'm also delighted to inform the residents of Kurenkuru that all the 255 houses will be constructed using our newly developed housing designs. These innovative and modern designs were officially launched on 29th October 2025 by our Honorable Minister James Sankwasa, alongside the unveiling of our integrated strategic business plan for the next 5 years. The new designs reflect our commitment to quality, sustainability, and improved living standards. They incorporate thoughtful architectural features that promote comfort, energy efficiency, and aesthetic appeal, ensuring that every home is not just shelter, but a place of pride and dignity for its occupants. This milestone marks a new chapter in our journey to transform communities and uplift lives through infrastructure development. We look forward to seeing these beautiful homes take shape.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
We look forward to seeing these beautiful homes take shape and become part of Kurenkuru's growing landscape. We extend our heartfelt gratitude to the Kurenkuru Town Council and the leadership for their unwavering support and for making this land and Extension 6 available to NHE. Your leadership is a shining example of what can be achieved when local authorities and NHE work hand in hand. At occasions like this, we always call upon other local authorities across Namibia to copy and paste the Kurenkuru model, to avail more land to NHE so that we can continue delivering on our mandate of providing affordable housing to our people. Let us continue building together, not just houses, but communities, futures, and hope. And I thank you.
Thank you very much, Executive ID Acting.
Let's now get in touch with our reporter and journalist, Anakleta Haikera, to also speak on this. A very good afternoon to you, Anakleta Haikera, and it's a pleasure to have you with us right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Thank you very much. Happy. I'm also happy to be on the radio again.
Yeah. Anakleta, I'm also very excited. I'm excited for the announcement that the National Housing Enterprise is going to construct, or actually for the servicing of the land of Kurankuru Extension 3 site, handing it over, of course, to Saki Shikongo Construction for the development of 172 new houses. Now, of course, this is something that is quite welcomed because, I mean, this is what we've been crying for. I mean, any person would be saying that I want to own my own house. What are your sentiments in regards to this?
All right. My sentiment to this is that a lot of people have been in rent, and most of them have been complaining to say the renting monies are going up, and also for now they need something that they can own as their own, especially the young ones. I remember even at the event when Dr. Liveve was talking, was saying many young ones are still staying with their parents. It's better if energy brings out houses that is affordable for everyone, so that they can at least move out from their parents' houses to own their own house. And you know, also the excitement that one will feel when you have your own house, that is something you can say, oh my, of time I wanted to open a door for myself, now I have one. So this is something that someone will say is a relief to many that are at least renting, or those that still don't have houses, but now they can be solely heir of a house or house owners.
The opportunity also, of course, comes with creating jobs, and estimated already 300 employment for those who obviously are going to service the land, who are going to construct. What do you think about that also? I mean, there are so many people looking for employment and yet an opportunity and an avenue. But while we are discussing that, Anakleta, the issue of, giving contracts to one company and one company then, you know, hiring people and then those third people getting the money, you know, it's just not really sitting with us well lately, because at the end of the day, the company takes away a lot of money and those ones who are actually doing the work get very minimal. What do you say on that?
For this one, it's going to be a little bit different, because they also announced that they are going to bring in more companies, because they want these houses to be done within 8 months, so to say. So, and also it's not only one company that is going to be constructing this, but there will be maybe four to five companies that will come on board, just to also create more employment to job seekers. And remember, most of the youth nowadays are unemployed, and through this, there has been a lot of suicide cases reported because people do not have jobs, so to say. But I managed to speak to some of those that were saying they were taking their CVs, because for now you find that there are many people that have finished grade 11, grade 12, but still at home. Some are even graduates, but they even narrated that those that are also at RVTC that have completed with RVTC, or let me say vocational training, can also be plumbers at the site. So there's just a lot that is going to happen. And I can assure you that really employment will be created. And to say as Shikongo is on board now, they also have other people that they have employed already, plus the ones that are going to get in employment, and other companies that are also going to come on board. So you can already see that there is a change in some of the industries, or some of the big companies that we have. They are really, really trying to create jobs for people.
Energy now said that the houses are going to be constructed on their new development modern patterns. I mean, when we're looking at the kind of the old models, you see a very small two-bedroom house. And I mean, we are African. I'll be staying with my children and my cousin's children, and you know, so then that's how some people end up sleeping in the sitting room. So what do you think about the new model? And perhaps, I don't know what that really entails. Perhaps I'm sure it entails some cupboards and maybe a larger sitting kitchen space area and also maybe bigger bedrooms. Just what do you think about a new model of houses?
When we talk about new model of houses, it's not the tiny houses that we know, the previous NHE houses where you enter and already the sitting room looks like a sleeping room or it looks like a kitchen. But when we look at these modern houses, they are going to expand it more. For instance, to have at least three bedrooms, four bedrooms, or even a larger kitchen and also a larger sitting room for people to have space and also for the kids to have somewhere where they can play as well. So they are only not looking at furnishing the houses, but also putting it in a modern house where when somebody enters in that house, you can, wow, you can say, wow, look at this. This is really what a person would want. And also that's a way you can also attract customers by doing the modern houses so that people cannot run away to say, no, these houses are so small, or if you live with your extended family, you'll be overcrowded, so to say. But I feel these houses are going to be more perfecto.
Interesting, man. Anacleta, thank you so much for making time for us, always right here on the Radar News Analysis.
You're welcome.
Okay. And with that, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with more news right here on the Reader News Analysis. Now, remember, you can also partake in the news bulletin. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Perhaps you are in Kurunkuru and you also want to share opinions and contributions, or perhaps your questions also regarding the news we just delivered to you. But for now, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
It's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now, of course, it's the 10th of November 2025, and it's a Monday, and that means our The Villager e-paper is now available this Monday. Now, do grab your copy so you can read up on the following headlines. Non-compliant telecommunication devices not welcome. That is according to CREN. It's the Communications Regulatory Authority. Other stories in our newspaper is the mineral royalty-based sinking fund in order to reduce borrowing suggested. NHE launches $13.2 million housing project in Kurunkuru. President reaffirms Namibia's climate goals at COP30 pre-engagements. Namibia boxers grab WBO Africa titles. Access to market is not always access to retailers. Chef, now do grab your copy and read up on the best economic and social news. Stay informed, subscribe to the Eagle Media House WhatsApp channel and receive a tri-weekly dose of social, economic and community news absolutely free of charge. All you have to do is send a text message to 081-200-4144. Of course, let's get right back into our news analysis. Now, the Namibia Statistics Agency has concluded the data collection for the 2025 Namibia Financial Inclusion Survey, the nationwide exercise, which began on the 6th of October, now wrapped up on November 4th, 2025, reaching 1,960 households across all 14 regions. Now, financial inclusion surveys like this one are vital for Namibia's development as they guide evidence-based policymaking and highlight areas where citizens are underserved. Now, such information helps government, financial institutions, and development partners design policies that promote accessible, affordable, and inclusive financial services. When citizens have better access to safe banking, credit, and insurance, they're better equipped to build sustainable livelihoods, to start businesses, and contribute to national economic growth. Now, in this discussion, I reach out to economist Dr. Omo Kakuyama-Tundu to discuss why financial inclusion is important for the development of any country. A very good afternoon to you, Dr. Omo Kakuyama-Tundu, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon, and good afternoon to your listeners.
Dr. Omu, of course, the Namibia Statistics Agency has just recently concluded its Namibia Financial Inclusion Survey. Just what do you think of this, and how do financial inclusion surveys like this one contribute to economic growth and policy planning, of course, in a developing country such as Namibia?
Yes, one could start by saying that a survey like this is important for policy and mostly investment decisions by the private sector. And maybe before one goes there, why it is so important to have financial inclusion is that it makes life easier and cheaper. That is very, very important to say cheaper. Because if you are sitting somewhere in Okalongo or somewhere in ASAP, if you have internet connectivity, you don't have to take a taxi to go to Hoba Bays or Osakate or Okalongo itself, a bigger place to conduct business.
Excellent.
Or even if you are a fruit vendor somewhere very far there, you can easily sell your products from there. So that is why it is very, very important. But now the bottleneck or the problem that I see in this whole inclusion story is the rollout of internet services, that is the communication mast, be it Paragon, MPC, or whoever. If you look at many, many remote places, you won't find those, so they don't want to enjoy this service. So it is very important for government, for instance, if they realize, that is when it comes to the policy side, if they realize that, let's say, 25% or 30% of the Namibian population is excluded from such services, then they can, like through their own internet service provider or telecoms service provider, that is the MTC, they can roll out more masts, that is network to the rural areas. But for government also, why they interested in the whole inclusion thing and this survey is to identify possible products that they could tax. So on that one, not everyone will be very happy, but at least if they identify certain products that were traditionally taxed through the financial institutions or system, then they could also try to devise ways to tax you. So on the business side, investment, the investors could see where they could go, mm-hmm. either in terms of population or financial services usage, and put up either their mast or all kinds of new technology that goes with that.
Mm.
But one thing that I should conclude with is that financial inclusion, when you look at Namibia, let's say you use Maris or you use Tamba, or you,
yeah.
all those things will be counted as part of financial inclusion. But one thing that we should know is that what is in those accounts, be it your bank account, be it your Maris, be it your other services, the problem is that you are having people who are using those services, but almost at zero balance. So that is another thing that we should look at.
Yeah.
It's not just to say, wow, Namibians, they 75% financial inclusion, but the type of services that they utilize could be really, really insignificant kind of inclusion in terms of what do you have in those accounts? Zero.
Mm-hmm. And not only that also, but let me bring in this question later. Dr. Omu, how can the government and the private tech sector use data from the Namibia Financial Inclusion Survey in order to bridge gaps in access to credit and banking services as a whole, not just including rural areas and urban areas?
One of the things that you have said, government, because this is a market economy, government is a regulator. Well, they assist here and there, like, as I have said, MTC is 100% government, if I may say, except the bit of listing that happened. One of the things that you mentioned, it is not related to your question, but it's data. Government could try through CREN and other government regulators try to make data cheaper. Because data is still very, I think Namibia is having one of the most expensive data bundles in the region.
Mm.
So something should be done about that if you want serious inclusion. On your question, yes, government and the private sector could perhaps work together through, as I have said, see how they could bring data down. We are not talking about Elon Musk's Starlink here, but
yeah.
there are many, many ways where you could try and use this data. If you say that people in a remote area somewhere in Kunene, for instance, don't have access to internet, how are you going to take connectivity there and increase connectivity there with quite data prices, if I may
yeah.
say so,
mm-hmm.
or data cost, as they call it.
Mm-hmm. How do financial literacy and education tie into broader efforts towards national development and economic resilience?
Financial literacy is important, but the problem is here, Juju. The charges by our financial institution, the formal financial institution, and also
yeah.
your if informal financial institution, or if I may call them like that, the charges and interest rates are so high that if you take your money to the bank, at the end of the day, that when you want to go there, you could have lost $200 that you could have even used to buy kids food or even supply a household with food for a whole week. So the high charges and interest rates just by our banks discourage our people to take their money to their financial institutions, and they keep them under the mattress.
Mm.
Now, why is it important for the populace to take money to the financial institutions, that is to have bank accounts, it is because that form your savings. And savings, that is what business people go to borrow to invest in their businesses, to grow their businesses and create employment. Because if savings are so low, then interest rates are going to be very high, and then business people will be discouraged, and even consumers will be discouraged to go and borrow money, money that will run, make rounds in the economy, even for consumers like Omu and Juju, and business people sometimes to expand their businesses and employ more people. So that is why it is very important for financial literacy, for people to know why it is important to go and put their money in a financial institution. It also discourages you being robbed. But for national development, it's so important. But we are just hamstrung or basically discouraged by high charges, banking charges, as well as your interest rates.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Omu, the question I had reserved is that, of course, when we're talking about financial inclusion, and you made examples of MTC Maris and, of course, Tambor, you know, are we perhaps with some of this, introducing some of this, apps and whatnot, are we perhaps not opening up an avenue to, make more room for many Namibians to be in debt? Because we know that a lot of them actually are struggling financially, and it becomes a repetitive circle of borrowing money, paying back, borrowing and paying back, and never really being financially independent. What's your say on that?
Look, Tamba, for instance, you are very right. What you are saying is that you are talking about inclusion, but at the same time, you are excluding people, because if your card is registered and you are having a Tamba, and you buy airtime, then offset against what you have got, maybe $30 or something. Mm-hmm. So what you are saying is that you have created debt for mostly those ones who cannot afford, so that maybe even if this individual wants to buy airtime, won't buy because the $50 that he or she has, even put away.
The $50 that he has?
The $50 that he or she has cannot afford even the lowest away, because part of that will be eaten by the Tamba.
Yes.
So what you are saying is that you are excluding this individual from enjoying communication services. So you have some of these are good for businesses and very bad for Namibians, and mostly the poorest of the poor.
I don't know, Dr. Omu, you are the economist. You will educate us further here. For me, financial inclusion means more than just educating the people about their money. I think it's about how to maybe handle finances and all that, and understanding what available opportunities or avenues are there for them to help manage their finances. I think it means it goes more beyond that, to actually include them, especially for those who have very great ideas but can't access the funds to actually get their businesses on ground. What do you think?
That is one of them. Juju, you are spot on.
Okay.
What you are hinting to is that if you have an unemployment rate of something like over 40%, how are you going to talk about inclusion? If people are out there, they really want to be, as you have, for their projects, that is their businesses, to be financed. They are running all over the place trying to get someone to fund their businesses. And they can't access that because they are unemployed. What you have seen, when they called the National Youth Development Fund, 11,000 people applied and only 42 or so did get in the first round funds, meaning that people are desperate. when we are talking about inclusion, it should go hand in hand with employment.
Thank you.
Because if people don't have money, what financial inclusion are you talking about? Mm. So you are political economy spot on. Yeah, so I'll end there. You are very right in saying inclusion without employment sounds like a big joke.
Mm. But all in all, in our conclusion, as the NSE has now announced that the financial inclusion survey has now come to an end, and that it's going to guide is an evidence-based policy making and to highlight areas where citizens are underserved. Lastly, also just to speak on why such surveys are important and why the public themselves, of course, as much as, of course, the surveys are being done and you know how people always want to receive finances in exchange for that. Just your say on why such surveys are important and why the public themselves, they have to be quite forthcoming and truthful and honest for the better planning of our economy.
All data, to be good, as you say, trash in, trash out. If we don't give serious answers to some of these surveys, then definitely we won't help our government in case there is a case for regulation or to assist, as we have said in the beginning, maybe to roll out internet connectivity to very far places where people really want to do that and to see who is really, really excluded so that they can assist with rolling out some of this internet connectivity and trying to make data cheaper, etc. So surveys are very, very important and we should take them serious. If we give them some good information, at least it can be used for our good.
That's true. Dr. Omuka Kiamatendo, thank you so much for making time for us always right here on the Reader News Analysis.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
Bye.
And of course, let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace, but I'll be back shortly to engage yet on other matters. This is on the Reader News Analysis. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Ono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado ilinawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ilinawa. Ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko mberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the R.
Welcome back. And now joining me in studio telephonically is Nginomenovari Erastus, economist Nginomenovari Erastus. A very good afternoon to you, Nginomenovari, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon to you.
Now, Nginomenovari, you wrote an opinion piece in the Villager newspaper where you spoke about access to market is not always access to retailers' shelf. And you point out, and I think if I get the core message of this opinion piece, is that we can create our own shelves or we can create our own market. Kindly get into the core or the beginning of just this. How exactly, what is it that you're saying? How exactly can we perhaps do that?
Yeah, look, the observation of that there is such a level I don't want to say an obsession, but there is an understanding that the only market or access to market is only limited to the retailer shelves. And we have been spending so much time trying to get our product in the traditional retailers. Everybody's saying, no, they are not stocking Namibian product. They are not stocking our product. They do not want. But if you take a look at it, that instead of us fighting or trying to get our product into somebody's shop, the point is here that how about we create our own retailers? Because the traditional retailers or the bigger retailers, yes, they have an advantage because they are well distributed all over the country. So the key thing is, Anna, that we are trying now to access their shelf space so that they can distribute our product. But unfortunately, the requirement and everything that they put there are too stiff or too restrictive for our small enterprises. So now the suggestion is that since now that it's not working, they are not agreeing to assist, or they are going very slow in terms of getting Namibian product on the shelf. How about we create our own retailers?
Mm-hmm.
How about we use the existing platform, like I mentioned, the AMTAs and the Home Shops and others, and stock them with our product? Because now we keep fighting and we keep doing this, and we are not moving anywhere.
Yeah.
But we have those things that exist. If you look at AMTA, AMTA is well distributed also.
Mm.
They're in Ongwediva, they're in Windhoek, they're in Rundu, they're Wewe, they're in Katima. So how about we use them to stock our product and they distribute them?
Mm.
How about we just bypass those who do not want to stock our product? Because now we are stuck. You know, we are stuck. We have open market all over the country. Almost every town has an open market. How about we structure them properly, then they can distribute our product?
Yeah. Well, maybe
So that is the suggestion and the perspective that I'm trying to put across there, yes.
Mm-hmm. How about maybe we actually get out of our seats and approach those markets and maybe try? You never know whether perhaps your product will really sell right on that market. You know, interestingly, when I had a business person it was actually on Life Lessons, and she was talking about how she goes to the markets to sell her mozzarella cheese and her pasta as well. And she's making money out of it. Is it perhaps that we're not thinking out of the box? Because, I mean, if I have a product which I'm producing and it's really good, my eyes will be on model opposed to actually going to the market and forgetting that I can still meet people, clients and customers who buy my stuff.
So that is the thinking. That is the thinking that I'm putting there.
Yeah.
We are now stuck because I go to AMTA almost every weekend,
mm-hmm.
and I'm seeing, like, probably can even 10 products or 10 Namibian products a day that are being stocked a day. So that is now where I came to the realization that if we have access or if we have such a big institution that we have invested in, it has enough space and it's our own infrastructure, we invested on it, then how about it stock Namibian product?
How about we make use of it? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and actually we can even expand it further so that every town should have an anchor distributing Namibian product. Then like that you solve the problem of access to market.
Yeah, what do you think perhaps needs to be done to get the ball rolling? I mean, this is an interesting idea, and of course it's coming from you being an economist as well. But what is it that you think can be done to be startup to just ensure that, of course, a lot of business people have access to AMTA and also where they can perhaps find it, and also the funding that's going to be needed to do it? Where do we get the ball rolling?
Look, all these things, all they require is just a change of mindset. It's a change of mindset. We need to look at the things more differently. Like I said from the beginning, we are stuck on ideologies and methodologies and models that are not working for us. And all we have to do is that, can we have a change of perspective? Because if you look at the municipality, the municipality chased the vendors. And I say this, the vendors are the first distributors of Namibian product. They are the off-takers. Like every farmer, if you ask him or her, our small-scale farmers from Etunda, from wherever, if you ask that particular farmer who buy your product, they will tell you it's the street vendors. Mm-hmm. But if you come to the municipality, there is no understanding that when they are chasing the vendors, they are literally saying Namibian products should not be sold. And they are literally destroying your whole supply chain. And if when they are chasing the vendors' cabbage and onions get to be rotten. Mm-hmm. And when they are rotten, the vendors do not go back to the farmer to buy the things. Then again, the farmer make losses.
Yeah.
So you see the whole supply chain, how we are destroying it because of our understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So you have two ways to distribute an Namibian product. Now you know that, okay, the other big retailer from South Africa do not want to stock your product. Okay, cool. Then who else can stock your Namibian product? Mm-hmm. It's the vendors. So then why are you mistreating the vendors if you know they are the one who distribute your product?
And contributing to the economy.
Yeah, so it's a whole understanding. This does not require us to go to school and get another degree and get another PhD. It is the thinking of how we look at the economy. Everybody wants to do their, like, we want to be the Singapore, we want to be the Japan. No. So that is where we get the things wrong. We always looking at those countries. No, we also want to be like them. We want to build all the tall buildings. But your economy is different. Your people are different. How you do things is different. So what is required really, really, it's an understanding at the highest level. What do we need to do? What is the importance? What are the other distribution channels that we can actually expand? That is the key question. Because now you are worried that the farmers are producing. Like in Etunda, they are harvesting now a lot of potatoes. But they have no off-take agreement with any retailer or anything.
Yeah.
So you ask yourself this question. Who is going to buy those potatoes? Who is going to distribute them? Is the vendors. Now, if the municipality within Oshakati, within Rakana, do not have a change of perspective, and they will keep chasing the vendors, they will keep mistreating the vendors.
Mm-hmm.
So that perspective does not reach them to understand that these vendors are the one who go to Etunda and get the potatoes and distribute them.
Mm-hmm.
So they are literally giving our product access to the market. Because the understanding is that it's not that Namibian people do not want to buy Namibian made product. I think that many people get this wrong.
Yeah.
It's not that the people do not want to buy Namibian product. The most important thing is that when I go to a retailer, if there are no Namibian products, what do you expect me to do? Because you go to the supermarket every day, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you go in a shelf and there is no Namibian product, what will you do? There is nothing. So you will not buy a Namibian product.
Exactly.
So if the visibility of the Namibian product is needed, and if the Namibian product is not situated where the people go daily, then nobody will buy it. So that is the whole thing which is actually killing and preventing us from industrialization. Our Namibian products are not visible. Mm-hmm. The people who sell them are chased at the end, or the stores that are supposed to or there are no many retailers that can actually stock them. Like I mentioned, the AMTES.
Yeah.
So you see, that is where the weakness is. So we can actually industrialize. Namibian people can buy Namibian products, but the Namibian products are not visible anywhere where they go daily. Mm-hmm. So it's a change of perspective. It's a change of mindset and looking at building an economy differently compared to the outdated models of how we used to do things.
Okay. Quite interesting. Yeah. Mm. I sure hope that that message has reached business people out there to change their perspective and change their mindset. I appreciate how you say this doesn't require going back to university and getting a degree to actually think like this. And you're making sense. It's not just the business people themselves, but it's those ones who are at the chain, you know, who are making the decisions so that the decisions benefit the people. And at the end of the day, we can't keep talking about growing our economy when we are looking down at grassroots level.
Definitely. So it has to start from there. So visibility of Namibian product is really needed. And we have to find a way for those products to be visible. If we can't get them in their retailers, if you can't get them in their shelves, yes, if there are shops, it's okay. They invested in it. So then the key question is now, what can we do to make sure the Namibian product get to be where it needs to be so that it can be seen? So that when we're on my way home, on my way to work, it's closer to me. You see, when you want the spinach in Windhoek, you have to go to, if you want to buy Namibian spinach in many cases, you have to go to Okuliangava. And you know, like when the road was closed, the traffic was a mess. So nobody will go to Okuliangava because there's always traffic and it's far. But imagine if those vendors, if we had some good infrastructure that are tailor-made within the city center where you can position three or four vendors, not under the bridge, no, where we chase them. Under the bridge is not visible. You know, when I'm going into venue, so now you want me to go under the bridge to go find the vendor. No, position them where I am walking.
Yeah.
When it comes to this, it's all about foot traffic. It's about foot traffic. And I'm repeating this. The most critical thing is that they are actually selling Namibian product.
Yeah.
And the more you hid them, wherever you are hiding them, you are hiding Namibian product.
That's true, man.
So that is the most helpful thing that we need actually to realize. Yeah.
I hear you. You know, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the radar and also educating us on that.
All right, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
And let's pause here now to make room for a scheduled commercial break. But this is On the Reading News Analysis. Do stay tuned. Back with more once we come back from the commercial break.
Get social with us on Twitter.
Goeie nuus, Imba het nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinte nuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. Is jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Imba te geniet? Kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is EagleFM Namibia.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurani engenyo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukulile Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshiwala Konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka Opone ushendike nawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM Onora etatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali mbali no heali Ile kumberewa mbara hetatu natu mbali o hetatu matatu omafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back, and now for some economic indicators and thereafter trading economics. Now, one US dollar today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 30 cents. 1 euro is equals to 20 Namibian dollars, 0.02 cents. 1 pound sterling will get you 22 Namibian dollars and 78 cents. 1 Swiss franc will get you 21 Namibian dollars and 46 cents. 1 Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 30 cents. 1 pound sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars and 78 cents. Now for trading economics, industrial production in Greece surged by 6.8% year-on-year in September 2025. That is after a revised 2.8% decline in the prior month. Now this ended two consecutive months of decline and marked the strongest growth since July 2024 as output rebounded sharply for manufacturing. Now the annual inflation in Latvia rose 4.3% in October 2025 from 4% in September, the highest since August 2023. The Bank of Uganda maintained its benchmark interest rate unchanged at 9.75% on November 10, 2025, marking the fifth consecutive meeting with no adjustment. Now, the decision was aimed at containing inflation while also supporting economic growth amidst global uncertainties. Now, inflation has remained relatively subdued in recent months, dipping to a 7-month low of 3.4% in October. Core inflation fell to its lowest since March 2024 at 3.4%. The central bank revised down its core inflation forecast for 2025-2026 to 4%, between 4% and 4.5% from the August estimate of 4.5% to 4.8%. Meanwhile, total orders received by the Swedish industry rose by 7.2% year-on-year in September 2025, following an upwardly revised 7.8% jump in August. Orders received from customers in Sweden increased by 2.6% versus 3.5% in August, and orders received from customers abroad soared 10.8% versus 10.5%. And of course, that's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators. We pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we'll tell you what's happening in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. Do stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal. It's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. We're starting off in South Africa, where they are gearing up, or expectations are quite high, as South Africa gears up to host the G20 summit, regardless of Donald Trump not being much of it in support of it.
Global focus will shift to South Africa as it prepares to host a G20 summit amid a myriad of global challenges, including trade wars, conflicts, inequality and climate change. Preparations are in full swing at the Nasrec Expo Center south of Johannesburg, where world leaders from the richest countries will meet. For South Africa's priorities are pretty clear.
We expect the summit to make a clear political commitment to address debt vulnerabilities that low-income and middle-income countries are suffering under at the moment. We want to see the issue of the cost of debt being addressed, because many countries are having to spend the income or the revenue they have largely to pay back debt and not to advance their people's developmental needs, such as education, health, and many others, and infrastructure.
Pretoria seeks to push for the reforms of global institutions, harnessing critical minerals for inclusive growth and tackling the scourge of inequalities.
For us in South Africa, being the most unequal country in the world, and also Namibia, and I'm so delighted to have my sister here, Monica Gengos, for having not only been here, but also for having launched the report that she worked on together with others on breaking the inequality pandemic cycle, building true health security in a global age. Interesting that the two countries that are really at the top of league of unequal countries should be acting together to launch reports on inequality.
You as leaders can do something about it, but that's the second message is, if you're going to do something, do it on the basis of facts and our understandings of the sources, the dimensions, the interrelations, the consequences, what we know from what has worked and what has not in various contexts. Every place is different. But so we're not going to tell any particular country, but we can, this panel can say, this has worked, this has failed, this is the reason this has failed. But inequality is a choice, and you can do something, but do it on the basis of theory and evidence.
U.S. President Donald Trump has indicated that he won't come to the historic event.
For generations, Miami has been a haven for those fleeing communist tyranny in South Africa. I mean, if you take a look at what's going on in parts of South Africa, look at South Africa, what's going on. Look at South America, what's going on. You know, I'm not going to. We have a G20 meeting in South Africa. South Africa shouldn't even be in the G's anymore because what's happened there is bad. I'm not going. I told them I'm not going. I'm not going to represent our country there. It shouldn't be there.
But Ramaphosa is adamant that Pretoria and Washington, D.C. will throw their frosted ties.
The noise between our two countries has quietened down, and we are now engaged in serious discussions with the United States, particularly their trade office. And that, for us, is a great advance. Let me add that a number of other countries are still in the woods discussing trade issues with that big market, and they are nowhere near any form of conclusion.
Kailisa Kumalo, SABC News, Johannesburg.
I don't know about you, but I don't know. I feel like as if South Africa maybe needs to start looking at other markets. Of course, SA and South Africa have quite a market, of course, but with the way things are going and obviously with the way Trump is also making his remarks towards South Africa, regardless of President Cyril Ramaphosa having been to America to have a discussion with Donald Trump, it clearly didn't really avail much in that aspect. But maybe toned down the tension that was there. But still, you can see that there's still some sort of tension. They're not really on the same page. And I think maybe this is the time they really should focus on other areas and other avenues. Not that there is no other really market to explore. But nonetheless, well, let's now still listen to SA's new vehicle sales growth, which is showing a momentum.
New passenger vehicles sold in October numbered 39,610 units. That's up 14.8% from the units sold in October 2024. While light commercial vehicles sold, including buggies and minibuses, rose by 23.9% to 13,361 units. Analysts say there's been a positive growth momentum in vehicle sales for over a year now.
New vehicle sales have really shown us strength this year. We think a big part of that has to do with the replacement cycle that is currently under South Africa is currently undergoing, right? It's a replacement cycle in the household sector where you're seeing vehicles on the road have been kept on the road for an extended period of time. And I think consumers are probably seeing the current time as an opportune time to sort of, you know, replace, you know, those vehicles.
Mano also cited an increase in the corporate sector, particularly the rental segment, which she attributed to a general uptick in tourism levels in the country, with the summer holiday season also driving demand. Analysts say improved macroeconomic factors and even access to the two-pot retirement savings system have gone some way to boost consumer confidence.
Today, we are again in a economic cycle where the interest rates are better. We've got a very stable rand-dollar exchange rate for quite a considerable period, which means car prices aren't increasing constantly. And we also have lower inflation for the consumer. So at the end of the month, once you've paid all your expenses, there are more consumers now that see that they've got the affordability to buy a vehicle, and so they've gone out and done exactly that.
While domestic vehicle sales numbers were impressive, export volumes registered tepid growth. 32,659 units were exported. That's up a mere 0.5% on the year before. And Mano worries that if export volumes don't move up more briskly, it could have negative consequences for the local car manufacturers and the jobs associated with them.
The latest numbers show you that there's a little bit of trouble that is starting to creep in, right? It's the tariffs, it's the uncertainty, it's the dumping issues, and we still have logistical issues here as well. So I think that export market might be a little bit troublesome going into 2026, but we know that structural reform is underway and South Africa is trying to work on a deal with the United States. So hopefully we get good news as we go into maybe the latter part of the forecast, 2027, 2028.
While a stable currency and cheaper vehicle imports, particularly from the East, as well as a lower interest rate environment have aided consumers in playing in the new vehicle market space, Borta argues that these factors alone won't be enough to sustain the growth seen of late.
I think just what we need to get sustained growth, as we've seen over the past year, I mean, it's double digits across light commercial vehicles and passenger vehicles. To see more of that, you would need job growth, employment growth, and you would need income growth to come through. And that happens when you've got investment. Therefore, that's always foreign direct investment into the country can create those with stimulating policies that can also help with that growth.
While interest rates are not the only factor in driving car sales, close attention will be paid to what the Reserve Bank does next in terms of its monetary policy stance when it announces its rate decision later this month. Nompumelelo Siziba, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, the government of Zambia backs up investigative journalism growth.
Accompanied by a laptop and a book again written by our guest of honor, Dr. W.K. Mutalina Lumango.
We remain steadfast in safeguarding press freedom, ensuring that journalists work without intimidation, without censorship, or undue influence. We believe
in Sudan, that the vibrant
media is the lifeblood of democracy, providing citizens with accurate information and empowering them to make informed decisions, particularly as our nation undergoes economic transformation and prepares for the 2026 general elections. Distinguished ladies and gentlemen, your government is fully committed to promoting investigative journalism. It has since enacted the Access to Information Law, which will ensure that investigative journalists have a credible basis for launching an investigation.
As an academic, I often say that journalism and scholarship are close cousins. Both are grounded in curiosity, verification, and interpretation. But investigative journalism carries an additional weight, an additional responsibility. It translates complex realities into accessible truth.
Sudan Armed Forces shoot down RSF drone.
Yes, it shot down a drone operated by the RSF over the city of El Obeid in North Kordofan State on Saturday. Sources say the drone tried to target military and civilian sites west of El Obeid. The RSF launched a series of coordinated drone attacks on four cities controlled by the army on Friday, a day after announcing it had agreed to a US-led humanitarian ceasefire proposal. Meanwhile, a local news agency has reported that poverty in Sudan had increased from 21% to 71% due to the ongoing conflict. It added that 23 million Sudanese now live below the poverty line. Our correspondent Naba Muhyiddin joins us live now from Port Sudan in Sudan. Naba, what's the latest on attacks by the RSF on El Obeid in North Kordofan and those four cities mentioned by the Sudanese army?
Thanks, Benina. Actually, El Obeid was attacked by the RSF and the drone was shot down by the Sudanese military in a recent attack by the RSF in a bid to control El Obeid city, this major city that lies 400 kilometers away from the capital Khartoum and links Darfur region to the capital Khartoum. It's one of the main supply routes and also the city itself. It's one of the main commercial hub for Sudan's main crops, all of the crops that are exported. So El Obeid city is one of the major cities in western part of Sudan and in Kordofan, particularly the capital of North Kordofan. So the Sudanese army shot down the drone attack with no casualties registered, but we are expecting new attacks in El Obeid because it has been all of the cities around the Lubaid has been controlled by the RSF, and they are trying to control it the same way they controlled Al-Fashir when they have been besieging it for 17 months. Other cities are including Khartoum, the capital, Omdurman particularly, and Atbara in River Nile and Ad-Daleng. So the RSF are escalating on the ground by attacking civilians and civilian infrastructure in different parts of the country.
Now, but the RSF agreed to a humanitarian ceasefire. Has the Sudanese army also commented on this or agreed to it? And also, what can we expect in this regard?
Actually, the Sudanese army has not yet confirmed it, that they will engage or start the ceasefire, while many people expect that it will take very long time for the Sudanese army to agree and to put conditions to the ceasefire, because the ceasefire, meanwhile, or in this current time, it will complicate an already dire humanitarian situation in the country, as many cities are entirely besieged by the RSF, including Ad-Dalaj, South Kordofan, and Kadubli also in South Kordofan. So the Sudanese army has not yet confirmed it, but we are expecting that the updates and the fighting on the ground, of course, will impact on the acceptance of the Sudanese army to the ceasefire or not in the coming days.
The Sudanese government says poverty levels have risen to 71% from 21% where it was before the conflict escalated. What are you seeing on the ground? What's the situation of the Sudanese people?
The Sudanese people, since the war erupted in April 2023, Benina, they have been struggling because of the conflict and because of targeting their livelihood in different ways. Most of the markets were targeted and were stopped because of the intensified fighting in Khartoum and in Al Jazeera and in other states also. And also factories were targeted by the conflict. The main infrastructure was targeted, including power plants and water plants. That impacted not only the life of people in different in their homes or in their neighborhoods, but also it impacted one of the main sectors in Sudan, which is agricultural sector. So different escalation during the 2 years and a half of the war, of course, impacted the Sudanese people in different ways. On the ground, we are seeing people are suffering to put food on their table every day. We are seeing skyrocketing prices. We are seeing the impacts of the war every day. As people are suffering, our markets are still not stable. People even who went back to Khartoum, more than 1.7 million people who went back after the Sudanese military controlled the capital Khartoum right now are suffering the devastating economy that is largely impacted by the war. So families are impacted by the collapse of different sectors, including health sector, where 70% of the hospitals are not functioning. Education system has also collapsed. More than 19 million children are out of school. Displacement is also increasing whenever there is new attacks on cities like we saw recently in North Kordofan, Bara, and now Lubaid people are displaced. So the market changes, the needs are bigger, and the humanitarian crisis deepens every day.
Naba, we appreciate that update. Thank you very much for that. Naba Muhideen speaking to us there from Port Sudan.
U.S. President Donald Trump has welcomed the BBC's boss's resignations. Let's take a listen.
Hello, good evening. Tim Davey has tonight. Davey said there have been some mistakes made, and as Director General, I have to take ultimate responsibility. Last week, The Telegraph published details of a leaked memo which made a number of allegations, including suggesting an edition of Panorama had selectively edited a speech by President Trump. In her statement to staff, Deborah Turness also acknowledged mistakes, but added that recent allegations that BBC News is institutionally biased are wrong. Here's our media correspondent, David Sillitoe.
The BBC, and after a week of headlines and many behind-the-scenes conversations, a series of Sunday night statements announcing that both the Director General and the Chief Executive of News are resigning. The reason, or at least a major part of the reason, is this Panorama broadcast last year. The programme about Donald Trump featured this clip of his speech on January the 6th, 2021.
We're going to walk down
to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you. And we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
That sentence was actually from two different sections of Donald Trump's speech, 54 minutes apart. The first part of the sentence actually ended with this.
And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women.
And an external editorial advisor, Michael Prescott, feels the edit was seriously misleading. In a statement, the Director General, Tim Davies, said, while not being the only reason, the current debate around BBC News has understandably contributed to my decision. Overall, the BBC is delivering well, but there have been some mistakes made, and as Director General, I have to take ultimate responsibility. And his Chief Executive of News, Deborah Turner, said the ongoing controversy around the panorama on President Trump has reached a stage where it is causing damage to the BBC, an institution that I love. While mistakes have been made, I want to be absolutely clear. Recent allegations that BBC News is institutionally biased are wrong.
We're going to walk down.
The question is, how did a story in The Telegraph about a 12-second clip from a panorama lead to all of this? For many, it's about how the BBC responded.
They've known all about this for 6 months, and they were keeping shtum about it, hoping that it would go away. Instead of going away, it ends up with some incredible reporting by the Daily Telegraph, which has forced this change.
The problem is here that they, not that they're institutionally biased, but as an organisation, they appear to be somewhat stupid because they make really stupid basic mistakes, and then they are hopeless at PR.
For Tim Davy, it's far from the first headline-making crisis, though. There was the scandal over Hugh Edwards, the long-running drama over Gary Lineker, and more recently an apology about a documentary on Gaza in which it was revealed a young narrator was the son of a Hamas official. And that's far from a complete list.
The Director General of the BBC is a most enormous job, and you're dealing with MasterChef, and you're dealing with Hugh Edwards, and you're dealing with all these other issues that happen. And I think it's almost too much for one person.
And for the BBC, this has happened at a crucial moment.
These resignations and their accompanying statements make it clear mistakes, serious mistakes, have been made. And also that the reputation and trust in the BBC, especially BBC News, was being damaged. And all of this comes at a crucial moment, just as the BBC is about to begin to argue its case for its next charter.
I think it leaves the BBC in a very difficult position coming up to charter renewal, and the people who don't believe in the BBC fundamentally will be pleased to see these two people go.
And tonight, a statement from Donald Trump castigating the BBC, saying they were caught doctoring my very good, perfect speech of January the 6th. Tim Davies' resignation, the end of a turbulent time in charge, his watchwords throughout: trust and impartiality. David Siloto, BBC News.
Well, as we heard there, President Trump has commented tonight. Let's go straight to Sarah Smith in Washington. What else has the president said, Sarah?
Let me read you the whole of the post that he put on Truth Social. He said the top people in the BBC, including Tim Davy, the boss, are all quitting slash fired because they were caught doctoring my very good, brackets, perfect speech of January the 6th. Thank you to The Telegraph for exposing these corrupt journalists. They're very dishonest people who tried to step on the scales of a presidential election. On top of everything else, they're from a foreign country, one that many consider our number one ally. What a terrible thing for democracy. And he also posted links to various news stories about the resignations in The Telegraph, The Independent, The Daily Mail, and in fact on the BBC's own website. The White House first responded to this story last week on Friday when President Trump's press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, described the BBC as being 100% fake news and a leftist propaganda machine. And she too has posted on social media today celebrating the resignations of Tim Davy and Deborah Turness.
Sarah, thank you. Sarah Smith in Washington. Well, Chris Mason and Katie Razzle are here, as we said. Katie, this is unprecedented.
Absolutely. Not one, but two resignations. The President of the United States
calling BBC journalists corrupt. These are seismic times. Let's break it down. Let's take it first.
Quite interesting, but my opinion on this aspect is that, you know what, when a media house has gone into being unfruitful, turning into a gossip column, I think a lot of people tend to notice themselves as a media house cannot obviously say about themselves that we are very factual when they are not distorting. You know, when you see, whether it's a newspaper, whether it's a radio station, whether just a media house in general, when they have diverted from what they used to tell, now going in another direction, distorting the original stories and spicing up just to, you know, to feed the people's, hypes and, you know, get the people's sentiments rather, you know, just to please the people and get likes and comments, you know, then that's really off. It becomes so very obvious. And I think I would say definitely, and in my honest opinion, that BBC, I think is very, it distorts information. It's not always factual, and you know, when you have an agenda against a particular person, they almost always record very negative comments or negative news about Donald Trump himself. And sometimes you see this as a reputation with some media houses, where if perhaps there's a particular official or the particular person, any news they tell about that particular person is always negative. But that's the wrong part of it, because media has it's bounded to ethics and moral laws, you know, and integrity as well. You don't just go about distorting a person because perhaps you have a personal a personal agenda against them. You know, that's not right. Media is supposed to be factual. Any media house is supposed to be neutral. We're not supposed to be going with what you think and what you feel, but rather should be neutral. But nonetheless, when you do see a media house diverting, it's become so obvious to the people. It becomes really obvious, and it's sometimes the talk of the street, even though themselves try to deny it. But with that being said, we have officially come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Reader News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkon Anadengi program brought to you by Lois Echimi. And of course, do stay tuned for other programs coming your way. The business economic segment with David Shombe at 1800 hours, and the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 1630. Very informative. Make sure that you tune in on your way back home to keep you company, and of course gain insight and knowledge on many interesting aspects affecting us on a daily basis. Now from Indafa, happy Shushu, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place, same radio frequency, that is Eagle FM. And also do tune in via the website or via the app. Wherever you're tuning in from, make sure that you keep tuning and keep listening to On the Reader right here on Eagle FM. Goodbye.